across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone here on FreemanTV.com, where we are hoping to free the minds of the masses. The best way that you could help and share and support this show is by sharing our shows off to other people. This is our greatest limitation, the fact that we are not being found by the other people. It requires your effort. Just hit the little share button down at the bottom of the page to anything, to Reddit. Send stuff to Reddit. They hate us, so it'll be a lot of fun. So, go to any article on FreemanTV.com, click the Reddit share, and let's see how much they can stand FreemanTV.com there on Reddit. Or, of course, hit the Facebook shares or the Facebook likes or any of that. If I post it on Facebook, please share it, because we are limited in our engagement. We are limited in the amount of people we reach unless you help. So please, share FreemanTV.com far and wide so that we can build this into a powerhouse of change. I have some special guests coming your way for special hangouts, and we are going to have a hangout tomorrow, Sunday, this Sunday, right after this show, Sunday at 3 p.m., we will have Frauder X coming in for a live video hangout, in which I hope you all get to interact with him and ask a Freemason anything. You get to ask this Freemason anything you want to know. He's been up through all the ranks, he's been through it all, and he's a good friend of the show. Frauder X will be joining us Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern. That's so that more international viewers can join us. So 3 p.m. Eastern Sunday, come on over to FreemanTV.com. You will need to subscribe in order to view this live interactive video. So do so. Subscribe to FreemanTV.com. You can do it free for a week. So if you don't want it after the presentation, then just cancel it on PayPal. No problem. I hope to see all of you there this Sunday. And we're going to keep building this thing, keep moving, and keep going forward. And your subscriptions make all the difference in the world. So with all of that aside, I want you to know that you are here tonight because your mind is not your own. We are going to talk with Neil Sanders tonight, who is the author of Your Thoughts Are Not Your Own. His website, neilsandersmindcontrol.com. You can check it out. It's linked here at FreemanTV.com. Just go on over and check out his books as we get deep into it. As Neil exposes the evidence for officially sanctioned mind control programs, we're talking Artichoke, MKUltra, Monarch. Neil has degrees in psychology, film and media studies, and is a qualified hypnotherapist. He spent years collecting and analyzing declassified documents, scientific papers, and court transcripts, confessions from doctors, and testimony from victims and whistleblowers alike, to bring you a data that is going to help illuminate the media manipulation that we all suffer under. Now, Neil has a specialty in sales, and what you're going to learn is that sales is exactly the monster we're up against. Whether you're talking about buying products or if you're talking about buying politicians, the methodologies are the same. So Neil, welcome to the Free Zone.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on, Freeman. It's a pleasure.
It's great to finally have you here. I'm glad we got this show back up and running so that we could have wonderful people like you. I've also invited to join us Jamie Hanshaw, author of Weird Stuff, Operation Culture Creation, because in her studies of Weird Stuff, Jamie dug deep into many of the studies that you highlight so well. I thought she'd be a great addition to tonight's show. So welcome to the show as well, Jamie.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Neil.
Hi, Jamie. How's he going? You well?
Yes.
Excellent.
So I'd like to open this show with a little bit of an anecdote there with you, Neil.
Mm-hmm.
We were in England, and we had come there for the AV2 conference, which
Oh, yeah.
We actually had to sneak in to actually see this thing. And I think you also presented at, what, AV5?
Yeah, which was the most recent one.
All right, fantastic. All right, we'll get to that. Well, before we made it to AV2, we were wandering around England, and I ended up meeting up with some of the sovereignty people there, the free man on the land, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
And we went to a talk by Brian. I think it might have been Brian Garish.
Oh, yeah, Brian. Yeah, I know Brian.
And I'm in the audience, and we had traveled very far that day, and I hadn't had any food. So I'm in the background of this conference, and I'm munching on some shrimp crisps.
Right? Yeah, it's quality food you get in England, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And coffee, too. Anyway, so I'm in this conference on sovereignty, sitting in the back of the room, munching on my shrimp crisps. And Brian Garish is up there to tell everybody about how we give our power over to authority. And as I'm sitting back there crunching away, a member of the audience stands up and demands of Brian to tell me to stop eating my shrimp chips while we are having this discussion.
Okay, that seems a bit weird.
He immediately referred to the authority on the stage instead of coming to me and saying, hey, man, I'm trying to listen. Could you eat your shrimp crisps a little quieter? And this is our biggest issue on planet Earth, this giving up our authority. And I knew you would be the best person to start this topic and to start talking about how we lost this ability to feel our own authority in our world.
Well, I mean, there's a number of reasons, but thank you for a start for a very kind introduction. There's a number of reasons for that. One is that basically people are psychologically wired to look to an authority figure, because logic dictates that the person who's in charge, or the person who's the leader, or the person who's at the top of the league table has got there because of merit. We live in a meritocracy, so people that work hard will go forward. And so we can deduce from that that the people in power, the people in charge, are there because they know what they're doing and because they have possibly our best interests in heart. Otherwise, why would we have voted for them? But unfortunately, this is just an instinctual urge that goes back to sort of tribal living, basically. I mean, essentially, it boils down to this. The alpha male of a tribe, if you watch their behavior, they're the successful ones. They're the people that have done particularly well. They're the people who are likely to get the most attractive mates and get the most luxurious living space and just have the best quality of life. So how have they done that? Well, if you can watch them, if you can sort of see how they're going about their day and in some way mimic them, then perhaps you could in turn take that social information in and you could apply it to your own life, and then basically you could make your own living standard better. And so there's an instinctual reason why people do that. Unfortunately, that drive, that instinctual drive, has been taken advantage of, because, I mean, it boils down to other things, which is essentially that the manipulation of people's psyche and through the presentation of what would be deemed the norms, the engineering of consent or the manufacture of consent, what is an appropriate way to act in a situation? And for whatever reason, that gentleman felt that the appropriate way to act in that situation was to appeal to the authority figure on the stage. Now, what I think is perhaps tied in with that particular thing as well is the awkwardness of communication. Human beings are prickly, weird, often, stupid people, and they do strange things and that annoy you and don't make any logical sense because you can't see their motivation and such like that. And this is, to my mind, has been compounded by social media. Social media, it's a paradox, because it basically makes you less social. So what we're losing is we're losing the ability to interact on a one-to-one basis, because everything has got that screen in between us, because everything's got that separation, that it draws you back in the same way that like a combat photographer can look at gory scenes because he's looking at it through the lens finder. The technology that we're applying more and more to our daily life is basically becoming a filter through which we experience reality. And therefore, when you actually get up front with a person and all their strange, gaseous, smelly reality, then basically, it's a jarring experience. And I think both of those trends, all those trends, are becoming more and more prominent and more prevalent in society. And I think a lot of it is driven by aspiration and celebrity culture, because that's, again, how people will decode the world and how they will make their life better by imitating celebrities. And then it's compounded by this social media thing. And then also, civilization works on the basis, I mean, of creating trauma from an exterior point, so that basically the citizens are confused. You dazzle them with information, make them terrified, make them completely, you know, docile and unable to plan a route without using a satellite navigation system or find anything out by reading a book. Now I've got to Google it and get it immediately. You're taking away people's ability to function and to sort of to be independent beings, really.
Absolutely.
Well, I wanted to mention a really good question, because it seems like a lot of people are sick about hearing about celebrities and things like that, but I still think that it's an important topic, because you were mentioning that people have this relationship with celebrities, this, what did you call it, parasocial relationship?
It's the
same type of thing they have with God or something. And also, if you look back throughout history, human beings have always used the stars for navigation, right, to find their place in the world and to get from point A to point B. And so now what we're seeing is that people aren't looking up to the heavens for direction, but they're actually looking to the stars that Hollywood gives us for their blueprint of success, right? So why should we talk about celebrities?
Well, because, I mean, it can actually tie back into the concept of astrology in a sense, because the concept of parasocial relationships means that you don't really know the person. You have an idea that's been explained to you by somebody else. And so your perception of this person, it may be accurate, but it probably isn't, because basically, as you say, it's a constructed image. And what that again ties into, which sort of links back to astrology, is this concept of mythology and or Jungian archetypes. You know, these are the things. These are symbols that, again, you instinctually decode, and it can be just something as simple as, if a camera is tilted up towards somebody, they appear powerful because they're taller than you, so you're looking up at them or something like that. Or if they've got long flowing hair, or if the archetype of the hero, the archetype of the fool, the archetype of the old wise man, and such like this. And so these are the roles and marketing strategies that are basically applied to make you go, yeah, I want to be like that celebrity. Yeah, they're great. I'll buy into that brand, which is ultimately what it is. It's a brand identity, which is a construct. It's been carefully manufactured and marketed and to shape your understanding of another person.
Right. And so now we're seeing people think that talking about politics and politicians is valid and talking about celebrities is just gossip. But what we're seeing now is that world events are most likely staged, like the Boston bombing turned out to be. There's fakery in there, and Sandy Hook was fake. And so these world events are less real than what you're seeing of the content that they put in movies, such as The Matrix or They Live. So it's like, they're revealing the truth in the fiction, and they're saying that the fiction is the truth. Do you agree?
Yeah, in some cases, certainly, yes. What I think it is, though, is that basically people aren't interested in politics, but people are interested in the Kardashians, mm-hmm. right? Nobody at work. Leon Britton died today. Leon Britton, who's been linked to some incredibly dodgy behavior. His name was connected to Elm House, which is a brothel where kids were taken out of care homes mm-hmm. and used by the elites in London, connected to the Monday Club, which is a very right-wing element of the Conservative Party, which is one of the main political parties in the UK. He's died today. And so I was like, right, okay, well, something's going to come out, because he actively hid dossiers pertaining to child abuse in the 80s, probably because his name was actually in those dossiers. And nobody was interested in that. People were talking to me about Celebrity Big Brother. And so that is one of the things. The other thing is that, think of celebrities like poison, right? You know, if you're going to poison somebody, do you put it on a plate marked poison, or do you put it in a pie? You put it in a pie, right? Because they don't know they're being poisoned. The thing about leisure time, particularly sporting activity, but it can apply to celebrities, is it puts you in teams. It separates you so that you've got something mundane and pointless to debate about. It keeps you busy. That's the point about your downtime, right? When you're not at sleep and you're not at work, that's the time that you could be thinking and doing stuff and going, hang on, this really isn't fair. I'm exhausted. I've spent all bloody day at work and I've got barely anything to show for it. And yet the person who I work for has got lots to show for it. That doesn't make any sense, does it? But they don't want you to do that. So they want to, like, fill your mind with nonsense, fill your mind with unimportant things that actually drive motivation. And I'll give you another example. No one cares about politics till Angelina Jolie turns up.
Right. Or Leonardo DiCaprio.
Or any of these people. And why did we start taking actors' opinions seriously?
Right.
Like, these are people, I mean, I'm being over the top, but these are people who make their life by deception. So why are we taking, like, they pretend to be other people. They may be great orators and look good, but they're not, their political manifestos are often cloudy.
Right. So since you mentioned Leon Britton, it came across my Facebook that he was supposed to lead an inquiry into the activities of Jimmy Savile.
It wasn't to do with Jimmy Savile, although that is connected to it. There is an inquest going on as to Jimmy Savile, but it's not really going anywhere, strangely.
Right. They never do.
No, of course they don't. I mean, you know, as I say, the Franklin scandal, the McMartin preschool scandal, the Presidio scandal, the Penn State scandal. Like, they reveal what needs to be revealed to placate the public. In the same way that the Nixon-Frost interview placated the public, made the public think that they got one over on the president. And then they forgave him. Because that's another thing that celebrities do, is if you've got, like, if you're going to admit to, or if you're guilty of something, you never admit to it. You admit to something slightly less devious, and therefore you come across as magnanimous and look, oh, all right, he's a bit like us, you know, all right, we'll forgive him. Like, no, I'm not a paedophile, no, I'm a drug addict. I know that's bad, right, okay?
So they confess to a lesser crime so
exactly.
That he's taken off that.
Yeah, yeah, and you see that again and again and again. So I know why it looks like this, but no. But what happened was basically in the 1980s, it's connected to, say, the apparent use of guest houses and care homes as brothels for the pleasure of and for the entrapment of, apparently through espionage circles, the elite. In a similar way to people like Claudia Mullin talked about being filmed by Sidney Gottlieb during the first stage of the Artichoke program when she was 9 years old, you know, sexually pleasuring men. It's been exposed that at the Kinkora Boys Home, which was in Ireland, that they were actually using children from that to try and entrap senior members of Sinn Féin or the IRA in order to, you know, again, blackmail them and stuff. But it was sadly, and this was admitted by Ken Livingston, who was the Lord Mayor of London at the time, talking to David Mellor, who was an ex-MP, and this conversation was recorded. And what it was, it pertains to all these sort of things, and also to a shadowy group called the Paedophile Information Exchange, which was it was a group that was basically trying to promote intergenerational sex and remove the or drastically lower the age of consent. And there's several politicians that were connected to this in funding or in ideological ways and such like this. And so there was a big mess, and it's all connected to a pornography ring called the Spartacus Club that runs out of Amsterdam, and a guest house called Elm House. And essentially, I think it was an MP called Geoffrey Dickens presented a dossier of his collected information about the MPs and the spies and the people of interest that were connected to these, ring. And this dossier went missing, and I believe Geoffrey Dickens died in what could be considered possibly suspicious circumstances not too long after all this went about. And then basically this was all forgotten until recently, when the Jimmy Savile case came out, and then it started to go into, you know, people started to dig a bit more, and then Elm House was brought up again. And to say Leon Britton, they keep trying to start another inquiry into it, and everybody that they were proposing to lead the inquiry was suspiciously either business related connected through some sort of you know, fraternity or something like that to Leon Britton and to other people that were seemingly connected to the original cover-up. And so, you know, it's just nonsense, basically.
Well, here's another news story that just came across my desk. It says, 50 proven links the royals have to sex offenders.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes, and Jeffrey Epstein, which is the case that I'm very surprised that's actually as public as it is. My personal opinion on this is I'd be very surprised if that Virginia Roberts, I'm amazed she's not been pilloried by the press, to be quite honest, because I actually think her story has got a lot of credit. And you know, Jeffrey Epstein, I think there's about 20 girls that he paid off in out of court settlements during the first case, when he was actually sent to prison for, I think it was a 14-year-old girl, he paid her for a sexual encounter during a massage or something like that.
Now, you say at the height of all of our institutions, at the height of our organizations here, we're just constantly finding pedophilia, right? I mean,
it would certainly appear so. I mean, the other thing about the Jeffrey Epstein case that has been revealed, and was revealed many years ago when it first came out, was that many of his houses were also wired for sound with hidden filming equipment.
So we just watched this old Walt Disney production called Hocus Pocus, right? About three witches from Salem. And in the very first opening scene, it shows them stealing the youth from a young girl to make themselves more vital and younger and more beautiful, right? And another weird thing that we noticed about this movie was that in order to bring the witches back from the dead, a virgin had to light this candle of the black flame, right? And this was a running thing throughout the whole movie, was this little boy's virginity, and they brought it up a lot, and they even said, "You're not a virgin, are you?" And he's
yeah,
like,
he's like 13, and his 8-year-old sister is asking him, you know, "You're a virgin?"
Yeah.
As if this was some crime.
And so what we're seeing here is like reality again in the movies. These people, these dark sorcerers, steal the innocence from the children. You know, they sexualize them way too young and take away their innocence to feed their own life force. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah. I mean, it certainly would appear so. I mean, even on a very basic level, just the sort of the destructive power that they must feel is, you know, it's sickening. But it's a despicable thing in the same way as like, but I forget who it was, but it was somebody who was describing the most powerful thing that you can do is not kill a man, but send many men to their deaths. I think it might have been Kissinger, in fact. I may be completely wrong about that, but this is the point. It's the total control of another human being. And I think that's what. But to just to sort of tie again what you're saying about that, the celebrities, and tie it back to what we were saying earlier, who dictates trends? Who says what's normal? I mean, I'll tell you what, right? You know, if every Hollywood, if George Clooney came out and said basically, "I reckon it's all right to go to bed with 13-year-old girls," I think a surprising amount of people would go, "Oh, well, you know, let's at least hear him out. It is George Clooney,
after all.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he made Ocean's 11, for Christ's sake, you know?
And let's have Morgan Freeman in the background.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, it gives that, it's that gravitas, isn't it? That it's not real. It's a construct, like, which is what we've been talking about. But it gives that sort of thing. But a politician can't. Well, I'll give you an idea. Right, whenever they want to do an anti-drugs campaign, or they want to do an anti-smoking campaign, or they want to do anything, what do? They enlist a celebrity to engage with the public, because people listen to celebrities. People, like, nobody wants to admit it, right? But they can start an entire... They can change the way the majority of teenagers dress with one television appearance.
Right.
Or how they cut their hair, or the slang that they use. I mean, what is it that Justin Bieber says? All sorts of nonsense, but like, you know, that's, do you know what I mean? It's a phrase.
We're seeing Bieber haircuts everywhere.
Yeah, and these phrases that come into play, and you know, I don't know them, because
you consider that Beyoncé put "bootylicious" in the dictionary.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. This is the point, and well, I mean, that's just a thing. Look at the shape of women. That is apparently 10 years ago, Kim Kardashian would have got laughed at as a freak because of her derriere. But now, apparently, that's the desirable image that you want to achieve that. And it's nonsense. Again, you know, Kim Kardashian is a perfect example. Occasionally you'll see photographs of her and it's like, wow, oh no, she looks terrible in this outfit. No. That's what she looks like. The majority of... Yeah, this is the point. There's an incredible amount of framing and you know, after touching and stuff like that, that goes into, you say, presenting the image of a celebrity. South Park said it best. It's Kim Kardashian is not a tall, beautiful woman. She's a short, fat, hairy lady that manipulates the media.
Well, have you noticed that a lot of these starlets come about, if they're not actors or singers, they have a sex tape?
Oh, God, yeah. And again, like, when did that become... I mean, that sort of, like, memory hold. Kim Kardashian was on, I don't know, one of these terrible, she might have been Oprah or something, and they were talking about, so when your career started with reality TV, I said, no, it didn't start there. I remember that early episode where she kept shouting, Ray J. That was an interesting one. Like, but that's been memory hold. But when did that become, like, a, you know what, who sits down and goes... to their daughter, now in a couple of years' time, you might want to consider releasing a sex tape. Then,
right.
Then you could be respected in the same way that Kim Kardashian is respected, or in the same way that Paris Hilton is respected. And it's
or
just
even follow in the footsteps of old Miley Cyrus. They're going from the innocent Hannah Montana, who all the girls were in love with, and now look what she is.
Yeah, quite. You know, she's dangerous, isn't she? And don't you just want to be that little girl? She's stupid. Like, but yeah, here's the point, right? Okay, it depends how you want to look at it. There is an argument that it's it's just a way to market makeup and sexuality and clothes and et cetera, to children younger and younger and younger, possibly. But it's ubiquitous. Did everyone just come up with this at the same time and go, right, you know what, Brittany, schoolgirls. That's what we're going to dress you up like schoolgirls. That'll mess with their heads. We're not going to tell them how old we are. We're going to, again, pretend that you're a virgin for a lot longer than you are. There's a lot of very strange things to do with the presentation of innocence as sexy.
Let's talk a little bit about how this came about, because what's happening right now is many of these celebrities or celebrity spouses are coming forward to say, my spouse is an assassin for the CIA.
Yeah, so that was that. Yeah. It was a NASCAR driver.
Yeah, John Bush.
And you got Scott Stapp from Creed.
Creed, the singer of Creed, going off, riding off, his wife calling 911 saying that he thinks he's a CIA assassin sent to kill Obama.
Yeah.
That was the singer of Creed. And again, we keep seeing this CIA manipulation. Now, Alias was one of the very first television shows to have an open CIA liaison working with them. The FBI obviously has had many liaisons in time before this. There are numerous books like Operation Hollywood, the CIA in Hollywood, and to explain how this secret agency is promoting their own ideals through these Hollywood shows. I personally am a huge fan of Chuck, all right? You know? And the CIA must have been studying Goebbels pretty well, because every episode of Chuck gives me a real emotional sensation. But the other point that I want to make about this, beyond them being contract killers for the CIA while being our celebrities, they also, we often forget the occult roots of the CIA or MI6, and that we are looking at, I mean, if you were to go listen, maybe I can play that audio now, to a ritual performed at the Skull and Bones, where the CIA was formed, you're going to hear murder, you're going to hear screaming, you're going to hear just the most horrific ritual that you could ever be put through, and then this is where the CIA is founded. So let's talk a little bit about how messed up it is to think that the CIA, with their own PRs, are just some nice organization trying to help the world and didn't spawn from this club of hell.
Well, yeah.
And then how all of our celebrities seem to be also Hollywood's army.
Well, yeah, and Fight Club, which a lot of people would take to be an anti-establishment film, the producer of that was a Mossad agent. Yeah. It's a... what's his name? Arnon something. I forget his name. But yeah, he revealed that basically he was a Mossad agent. But the point is, it's propaganda. Like, public relations and propaganda are the same thing. All right, here's the thing, right? When they first started the public relations, Bernays tried to call it propaganda. And everyone sort of felt that that had a nasty taste in his mouth because of those pesky communists and Nazis, because we just spent this whole time explaining that this is propaganda. This is anything that anyone other than us tells you is propaganda. And so when they started propaganda at home, people went, hang on, this is a bad thing. I said, right, this isn't propaganda, this is public relations. So the irony of public relations is that it's a marketed phrase for propaganda. They had to propagandize the phrase in order to get away with the propaganda. And so when it comes to, like, in books like CIA and Hollywood and Operation Hollywood, which are both excellent, it explains that essentially you get carte blanche to use pretty much what you want, you know, aircraft carriers, troops, weaponry, facilities, all sorts of things, on the understanding that you present the armed forces, the American government, and anything to do with America as positive. And this has led to numerous films having script changes, numerous films having character changes in order to present a more positive image. But more often than not, it just goes undetected, like in the Transformers films and stuff like that, which basically act as a very subtle recruitment agency, because because what it just says is, wow, look at all these guns and things that you can get. Wow, amazing. So, like, you know, which has also got Shia LaBeouf in it, who is a Disney.
Right. They made a joke about that on The Simpsons too, with Join the Navy in reverse.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I'll give you an example. Top Gun is the most impressive. I think a million people tried to enlist in the Air Force, like the weekend that Top Gun came out. Well, something incredible like that.
Do you have any opinion on this new blockbuster film, American Sniper?
I'd be astonished if it had no connection to the military. I've been looking on IMDb and various other places to see if they actually thank the Department of Defense or anybody, and I haven't actually seen the film yet, so I can't really comment. I've just heard the impressions that it's got.
Well, that's an important point. Like Stargate, they put in their credits, we give special thanks to the United States Armed Forces and Space Command.
Well, they didn't do it in Hurt Locker, did they? And then later, when it was revealed that actually they had helped, they went on a big sort of denial campaign. And basically, even people from the military were coming out and saying Hurt Locker's a dangerous film because it glamorizes and simplifies an incredibly dangerous job, aside from all the propaganda against, like, and what happened in that? Belly bombs. The enemy might put a bomb inside somebody's stomach. And then it happened again in Dark Knight. The enemy might put something in somebody's stomach. And then somebody actually put something in their underwear, and this was reported around the world, that they did put it in their stomach, which wasn't true. And so what do we get? We get, what's it called? Scanners at airports.
Right. Because
that ludicrous concept has been seeped into the consciousness to the point where it's become something that people go, oh, yeah, that's reasonable. As far as I'm aware, silencers don't actually work like silencers. You know, in the films, it's like, doof. It's not like that, as far as I know. As far as I'm aware, silencers are there to suppress muzzle flash. They're suppressors. They're not called silencers. But, you know, that's what everyone assumes. Because you ask somebody to depict what happens when they get shot, and they'll do the Arnold Schwarzenegger thing. That's not what happens. Like, that's not what happens. Like, I mean, Hollywood would dictate that you can take a gunshot in the shoulder, the other arm, in both knees, and still, like, crush the bad guy's head.
Yeah.
And so, but this is the point. There's numerous things that people don't understand, because they get their informed opinion and their understanding of the world and things that they've never seen from the news media or from films, basically. I mean, that's how stereotypes are born. Like, I think it's no coincidence that you had a whole slew of films like True Lies and The Patriot and Courage Under Fire that all came out of a very similar siege. Well, all these ones that came out at the similar time, that basically they flipped the enemy from Russians to people of Middle Eastern origin.
Right.
Very, very consciously. That just happened. Bam. Like, I mean, what's strange is that in Rocky 2, it's the Afghani rebels, who aren't really sort of named, but I'm assuming are Mujahideen, are, you know, considered his allies. And, you know, obviously they sort of morphed into the Taliban and into Al-Qaeda later, basically, when it was, you know, profitable for us to change their name, to rebrand them, if you will.
Hmm. Well, you were talking a little bit about Edward Bernays, right, and the propaganda became public relations. And he was the nephew of the famous psychoanalyst Sigmund Freud, right?
Yes.
And so I just pulled this book off the shelf, and it's called Sigmund Freud and the Jewish Mystical Tradition. So what we're always trying to talk about is how these culture creators are using magic and sometimes in nefarious ways, which goes into sorcery and mind control. But this book is all about how the Freudian psychology is largely rooted in particularly the mysticism of the Kabbalah, right?
Oh, right.
And then another thing I wanted to mention that I read about Freud was during his talk therapy sessions back in the day, many people reported ritual abuse. However, Freud did not believe them and formed his ideas about repressed sexuality and parent sex issues from these stories. But what we're trying to say is this is still happening, and those stories are true. And there's a really good therapist named Corey Den Hammond who gave a talk about satanic ritual abuse and mind control that he witnessed in his patients. And he really goes into detail saying it's statistically impossible to have patients from all these varied backgrounds and locations reporting the same elements of the satanic ritual abuse and mind control.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are numerous books. There's numerous books that sort of poo-poo it. The most famous one was obviously to do with the McMartin preschool trial, which was written by the Eberleys, Paul and Shirley Eberle. And it just so happened that they'd been accused by their children, but they certainly that may be incorrect. But
they
put out a magazine
for false memory syndrome.
They were the people that wrote the book. They were connected to it, basically.
Okay.
The false memory syndrome was Martin Orne and Ralph Underwager, who later released some statements saying that paedophilic sex was beneficial to children and so was kicked out. Martin Orne was connected to MKUltra, and Jolly West, who was also connected to MKUltra. And, you know, studied the hippies in their natural environment in Haight-Ashbury. But the Eberleys were involved with a magazine that promoted incest and paedophilia. And I forget who the lady was that was involved in the false memory syndrome. The person that actually found it as well, she found it because apparently she was falsely accused by her own children. But basically, as I say, the False Memory Syndrome Foundation is so obviously CIA operated, and it just basically existed to, you know, dismiss and discredit the testimony of children, essentially. But everyone, almost everybody that was involved in it, was connected themselves with paedophilia, child sex, or MKUltra mind control.
Yeah, and now we're finding at the heart of this Walt Disney Co.
Yeah.
You know, they were in the propaganda game right from the beginning, putting out Disney on the front lines, teaching people anti-tank technologies and cartoons, showing Donald Duck paying his income taxes. And this media manipulation has never ended for Walt Disney Co. They're obviously a military-industrial complex. As we can see, every ride is sponsored by a company like Siemens or GE or any of the military-industrial complex. And you had made a little comment about how the Pirates of the Caribbean had made fish extinct. And both Jamie and I were very curious about how that happened.
Yeah, can you tell me more about that?
Well, basically, that boils down to what phrases mean and what you might think a phrase means and what the person who's presented the phrase thinks that it means. And it's called a weasel word, essentially. And there's a series of films that most films will have at the end. No animals were harmed in the making of this movie. But War Horse and The Hobbit and Life of Pi and numerous others, including Pirates of the Caribbean, actually killed several animals. In fact, as I say, they actually made a couple of species of fish on this particular cove extinct, and which is not good going, but still held that legend. No animals have been harmed in the making of this program. So you go, well, how can that be? It depends what they mean by harm, because harm to them could mean deliberate. So we know we didn't deliberately do anything. So no, we didn't harm them. They were harmed in the course of our actions, but it wasn't deliberate. So we can safely say no animals were harmed. But that's how things work. I mean, the most impressive one, or the most obvious one, is with repeated use, this shampoo can remove the visible signs of dandruff flakes. And what does that mean? It means nothing. It's just a collection of words. I know that you might think it means that it's going to get rid of your dandruff, but if you examine each and every word, they don't necessarily mean what you think they mean. Like with repeated use, what does that mean? How many times? One, two, a thousand, a million? How much do you use? What would they classify as the visible signs of flakes of dandruff? Help doesn't mean complete task. It means help towards. So this is the thing, you can decode all of these phrases. There's a thing called the non-denial denial, which is basically, are you going to run for the presidency? I can't foresee a situation where that would happen. And next week, they run for the presidency. They didn't lie. They just an unforeseen circumstance happened.
Yeah, exactly.
So I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Yeah. It depends on what your definition of the word is.
Exactly.
I mean, he said that himself. I mean, he's backing you up there, Neil.
Well, it's nonsense, isn't it? But this is the science of public relations and marketing. It's perception management. It boils down to, as I say, it really boils down to engineering of consent or the manufacture of consent, to use either the Bernays or the Walter Lippmann phrase. And how do you do that? Well, Walter Lippmann said you do that by painting the pictures in people's heads. Because people's, like we were saying earlier about like people getting their understanding from of the world or foreign countries or whatever by... like, if you ever said, this isn't meant to be offensive, but a lot of American programs, you can tell you're in England when they go to a thing because you see red telephone boxes everywhere and Big Ben, even if they're like in Scotland or something like that. Because, you know, that's the understanding. That's the go-to stereotype. Right, I understand. Really. If you're in France, you've got berets on. And a striped jumper and onions around your and they're smoking
and a baguette.
Exactly. So these are the stereotypes, aren't they? But that's not an accurate portrayal.
Oh God! You know, if you look at Borat and his portrayal of Kazakhstan,
of course,
now, Kazakhstan holds the most sophisticated city in the world called Astana.
Yeah.
And yet, when people think of Kazakhstan, they're seeing little pig huts and shacks and rambles.
Well, they did it recently. Basically, there was in England over the last year, there was a terrible sort of panic. Oh my God, the EU has meant that Bulgarians can come or Romanians can come to England, and so they were basically, the hype on the news was that like, all these people are just going to come over here and take advantage of our good nature, like and ruin everything for everybody else, which is of course, you know, again, propaganda, which is the most effective. You know what's wrong with this country? People from other countries.
It's not us.
It's not us. It's not the people in charge. No, it's these other people, these poor sods that have come across on a boat. You know, what does that say? If they have the mechanism to destroy the entire infrastructure of a country and yesterday they didn't have any shoes, for God's sake, the country's in a mess, right? But it's that perception. So if you can paint that picture, and what they were saying on the news was that basically every time they showed Romania, they showed people with horse and cart. I mean, it's garbage to give you the depiction that these medieval people were going to come over here to our green and pleasant land and take our sweet ambrosia.
I like, mentioned that Romania has one of the most sophisticated particle accelerators being built there.
Of course. Do you know what I mean? It's a nonsense. We live in the 21st century. Like, do you know what I mean? These stereotypes are not accurate. But if that's how people get their understanding of cause, then there will be an effect. So it's that stimuli response. Basically, and there was a time shortly after 9/11 where in every crass comedy, you had an Arab guy getting onto a plane and the plane wouldn't take off. Ha, oh, hilarious. Because that stereotype is there now in the public lexicon. Do you know what I mean? This concept that all Muslims are fundamentalists, which is nonsense. This concept that these terrorists actually represent Islam in any real sense. Nobody's like, when is the Church of England going to apologize for the appalling lessons that we learned from the Yorkshire Ripper? And he was taking orders from the boss himself, apparently. But this is the point. it depends on circumstance and context as how you can spin events to your advantage.
Well, let's talk about some of the methodologies that we could use to spin things in our advantage. After all of this research you have done, let's help the audience a bit understand how they can release themselves and take back their minds. Do you have some ideas on that?
Well, I mean, the thing is just is really to be sort of aware of things. I mean, just to sort of tie in with the for example, if you understand the process, it's like a magic trick. If you understand how these things work, then all of a sudden, you know, you still all right, but it doesn't affect you in the same way. When you know where the wires are, you're not as amazed by whoever it is. What was his name? David Copperfield. So, for example, with this American sniper, I would be astonished if it wasn't connected to the military. And therefore, you can decode that as propaganda. So, you can still go and watch it, but understand what the person's perspective is. It's like a con trick. It's like a sales technique. If you understand that basically when you go into a sales room, they're going to offer you coffee, they're going to keep using your name, they're going to get uncomfortably close sometimes, and they might even try and appeal to your machismo or something like that, and so it's like they're going to use tactics, they're going to pretend to be your friend. Once you're aware of that, here's one, right? Telesales. If anybody ever goes, hang on a second, I'm just going to go off the line for a minute, click. Yeah, hang on, I've just spoke to our manager and we really shouldn't do this, but what I can do for you, mate, because I've seen you've been a loyal customer to me in the past, is I can actually offer you a massive discount on this, and we only really do this to our privileged customers, but I can see that that's something would that be something that you're interested in? If somebody does that to you, you know that's a con. They're doing what is called a drop close sales pitch.
Anyone who's ever been to a timeshare sales pitch will know that.
That's the point. You know, they'll pretend to be your friend, and they'll pretend to be doing you a favor. The most effective, according to a very successful marketer called Clotaire Pay, he says the most effective type of marketing is where somebody goes, I want that. Why? Don't know, but I want it. You know, if you don't know why you want it, don't buy it. There's a bit of advice, but again, that's the point. It's subtly conveyed to you, like the poison, like the slowly boiling frog. Nobody thinks that there's some nefarious reason to manipulate your consciousness and make you act in a particular way, but there is money, and that money is connected to other corporate entities on a shareholder level. So you think you're buying coffee or whatever and living that affluent lifestyle of buying an iPhone, and look at me, I'm so cool, and everyone will know I'm so cool, and when I walk past people, they'll know I'm one of those iPhone people with my designer coffee and such. But that's connected to a military industrial complex's slave labor and death. Right. Okay, and is it really, really worth it?
No.
Exactly. I think that would be the way to sort of, that's the only thing that you can do, really, is to try and sort of understand how information can be presented to you and to take everything that comes to you, not on face value, but to just, go, hang on, there might be, someone might be trying to trick me. Someone might be trying to butter me up in order to, sell me something or to make me think a particular way. Why are people blaming this group of people? What advantage have they got from telling me this information? You've got to assume that basically everything is like a Godfather film and be suspicious of everybody's motivations, to be quite honest. And then once you know sort of like the tricks of advertising and stuff like that, celebrity endorsement and weasel words and stuff like that, they become less effective. Like L'Oreal is one of the things, because you're worth it. That's insulting. Oh yeah, no, yeah, it's all right. You can be one of us. Sorry, you can join our club. All you have to do is spend your hard-earned cash, right? And then you can be like us because you're worth it. It's offensive. But once you understand the sort of how that works, that's playing to your, I want to be included. I want to know my status in the world. I want to be able to compare myself to other people and through this get meaning of my position.
Well, since you said that because we're worth it, it makes me think it's very narcissistic, because is it worth it to have all these animals tested on for their products? Is it worth it to collect the cord blood and the foreskin and put it in the beauty products. So you're telling you're worth all of this death so that you can look better a little bit for a minute.
But that's the point, isn't it? That's kind of like the magic trick. Don't look at the left hand, look at the right hand. Right. Don't think about that. Just think about, like, you know, say how many people will be jealous of you.
So let's talk about cultivation theory for a second, because this is something that you mentioned that I actually also wrote about in Weird Stuff 2. Do you want to explain that?
Well, it's a psychological theory or a sociological theory. I think it was Gerber and Gross that actually came up with it. And basically what it says is that the more time you spend watching television, the more time you come to accept the way that the world is presented on the television as being an accurate representation of facts, when it often isn't. I mean, often it's very, very sort of bleak and miserable and sensational, and there's no grey areas, it's all black and white. And as we were talking about before, you've got archetypes of heroes, villains, and stereotypes, so you know everything that's right. But the problem with that is that basically it misinforms you. It paints the pictures incorrectly in your head. It gives you an idea that you will absorb and take to be real. And one of the sort of facets of that is mean world syndrome, whereby people assume the world to be a far scarier and more violent place than it actually is, which can lead to people basically not going out, distrust of people that aren't familiar to them, basically. You know, it breeds, fear of ethnic minorities, an ill-informed understanding of other cultures, and basically just makes you paranoid, makes you want to stay in. And so what's strange about all of these things is, like, they build a paranoia. It's like a cyclical thing where they build this fear and this tension. And so there's two ways that people are offered to get, you know, to offer some respite. One is you can go to an authority figure or a celebrity or whatever to give you some advice, which is basically usually the second thing, which is buy this lovely, lovely thing. Treat yourself. This thing will make your life better, or at least it will. People treat possessions like magic points in role play games. If I've got three cars, then I'm doing better than if I had two cars. And I can compare it to that bloke down the road's only got one car. Huh. I'm much more. He's really not doing well.
To combat this very fear, we pulled an experiment, drove a school bus around the United States for an entire year, meeting nothing but strangers, and formed what we call the friendship agenda. And we started our own social network where people are actually meeting face-to-face through this internet. Yeah. So it's friendshipagenda.com. And we're hoping that many people will come over and join and start to intercommunicate with people on their level, because everybody in the Friendship Agenda I have met personally and brought them to this website. So it's not like Facebook. It's not like MySpace, but it looks like them. It's a very dynamic website. So I want the listeners to know that they should head over to friendshipagenda.com to meet people, because what this has done for people is open up a pathway where they can just go anywhere in the United States, contact somebody from the Friendship Agenda, and stay with them, visit, go, you know, it opens that door. And that's one of the main missions I've had with Freeman TV.
That's excellent. I mean, this is what you find is that people are people the world over, and most people are pleasant enough. They just want to get on with their life and don't have any ill will to anyone, unless it's been bred into them by ignorance and by a third party, usually.
Well, as an attempt to also step on this satanic ritual abuse situation that we're on, and the fact that more people blame the celebrities than the celebrities' handlers, and don't even recognize that many of these celebrities are actually victims and have been placed as figureheads and are taking the brunt of the attack. People are blaming the celebrities instead of the nefarious agencies in charge.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Or calling them mad and then ridiculing them. It's all right. It's okay to take the mickey out of Amanda Bynes, because look at her. She's nuts.
Right, exactly. So we have come up with a new campaign that we're hoping people will share. We're going to have a graphic there for you to share. You can put it on your Facebook profile or wherever you want to put it to show your solidarity in this. And we are calling it Release the Stars. a support group for victims of trauma-based mind control, satanic ritual abuse, and post-traumatic stress disorder. And I'm going to let Jamie outline the manifesto a little bit. Then we'll talk about that a little bit, and then this hour will be over.
Yeah, so I noticed that it's all about awareness, right? When someone has this cause, let's say ALS or breast cancer or whatever, they always change their profile pic to that colored ribbon to show their solidarity and raise awareness, right? So we made our own little graphic that you can change your profile pic for to a week, and if we all do it at the same time, maybe we can get some people saying, hey, what's this about? But yeah, the manifesto is really short, and we'll have it linked there to your show on Freeman TV. But it's really short. Just the first paragraph is about acknowledgement. So when you are sharing this and putting this up, you can also link the manifesto. But the acknowledgement is that, you know, we agree that there's a global underground network of dark occultists who use methods of trauma to create mind control slaves, and then they use key people in the government, business, religion, education, medical profession, military, professional sports, obviously the media and Hollywood too. They're under mind control and are also the perpetrators of it. So what we believe is that every person basically on the planet, if they're watching this media, you know, this mean world syndrome where the more media you watch, the worse you perceive the world to be. But so we're becoming slaves by proxy, and also they set the celebrities up as an example of success for people to follow. And this traumas, their traumas are spread to the masses, and so it's at this point that we focus our attention, because we think that if we can get these high-profile victims on board, then it will be easier for the unknown ones to come forth. So the second little tenet is all about communication, because we realize that this is a cult of secrecy, and also what you're up against is just disbelief, right? No one would believe that people would do that, because they wouldn't do that themselves. But we're attempting to spread the word, and in our culture, the celebrities have the largest following and social influence. So we encourage all these high-profile whistleblowers, such as like Roseanne Barr or Corey Feldman. I have a whole list of people that I want to tweet this to this week also, so maybe we can get a little buzz going. But the third tenet is about forgiveness and recovery. So we offer friendship solutions and various methods of therapy for all victims of trauma-based mind control, SRA, and post-traumatic stress from combat. And so we acknowledge that the perpetrators of the mind control were themselves conditioned to be that way, and this is where the forgiveness comes in. And there will be no witch hunts, and we have a network of survivors and teachers and therapists already and willing to share their stories and methods of recovery. So we'll have that linked up, and I hope everybody goes right now to their Facebook and changes their profile pic just for 1 week or a couple of days or however long you feel like you want to be on this kick with us of Release the Stars.
What do you think about that?
I think that's great. I think it's a really good idea. I'd tweet Shia LaBeouf. I think he might be interested in that.
Okay, I'll add him.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I had Cat Williams on here, Corey Feldman,
yeah,
Zan
Cat
Barr,
Williams.
Tila Tequila, Russell Brand, maybe. Mm. Let's see who else. Paris Jackson, Amanda Bynes, obviously.
Sinead
Rosie O'Donnell.
O'Connor.
Sinead O'Connor, that's a good one. Yeah, so we'll just tweet all of these high-profile people with this Release the Stars and see if we can't get some awareness spread around.
Yeah, I mean, just to sort of like by sheer coincidence, there was one of the satanic panics was in Nottingham, which is where I live, and when I was much, much younger and lived in a different place. One of the girls that was actually involved in the case was moved into a foster home that was near to where I was living. And so I went and asked the people about it, what was the crack, and they said yeah, she was telling the truth. She didn't in the media, she was destroyed, and in the court case it was thrown out, but they said with the best will in the world, this girl wasn't bright enough to consistently tell the same story over and over and over and over again, never changing any detail, with really strange, like, you know, things that were going on, berobed people. And apparently after all this sort of, you know, came about, someone gave her a lot of money in a flat.
Yeah.
So, you know, But obviously, if you look that up on the Wikipedia, that was a hoax.
Of course. Of course. And it's really hard for us to get this out into the public eye because all of the media manipulators seem to be pedophiles themselves.
Oh, yeah.
And no one wants anyone to get caught because the chain would lead right to the top.
I mean, there's a lot of books actually out there. There's one like, written by policemen and such that are involved in. And Cults That Kill is one. Cult Cops, I believe, is another one. But basically written by there's numerous, you know, you go on sort of Amazon or whatever and, you know, they'll give you links to other various bits and bobs. Dave McGowan's work talks about, you know, the actual physical evidence and such like that. So, yeah, there is actually, again, but it's one of these things. It's like I was saying earlier about I was talking to people about sort of, you know, any conspiracy. What was I talking about? The mission by, of the King David Hotel that it was, you know, the Ergan actually bombed their own thing as a false flag operation. And I was talking to someone about it at work, and they went, "No, I don't believe that. I just don't believe that." I said, "They admitted it, man. I know governments are corrupt, but I just don't believe it. They admitted it. Look it up. Look it up. It's admitted. Look up Gladio. Look up all these things. It is an active sort of, you know, intelligence agency tactic to bomb yourself and then blame someone else. Go, oh, no, look what's happened. There are innumerable occasions where that has been proved to be true throughout history. It's even on list verse for crying out loud. So, you know, it's not even, like, difficult to find this sort of thing. And they didn't believe me, or they didn't want to believe me. Yep. So this is a problem that people face as well, is that basically it doesn't matter if the information's there. You've got to want to look for it, unfortunately. Like, and people will do all sorts of psychological gymnastics in order to not alter their
belief
perception. Yeah, exactly. You know, because they've built this up over a few years. Life's precarious and scary, okay? So you don't want these jarring things coming in on you, which is exactly the way that – it's kind of strange because that's the same essence of, like, is the sort of Tavistock Institute method of control. This is why terrorist actions happen, are made to happen, are performed by intelligence agencies, or are allowed to happen, because these jarring like sort of stabs to your psyche make you feel insecure. Like the precarious nature of the economy is beneficial for governments, right? The terrorist actions are usually beneficial for the government in action, because it allows them to basically, if somebody's scared, you go into a fight or flight mechanism and you just don't start thinking. You don't want, like, if a bomb's just gone off, you want to run. You don't want to go, hang on. Let's not panic. Let's get a pen and paper out and start thinking about how's the best way to escape from it. You don't do that. You just, you know, you act on instinct. And so people can take advantage of these things. And again, this has been talked about in the manifesto of the Tavistock Institute, starting from about 1932 when Kurt Lewin took over it, who was a founding member of the OSS, by the way. They're saying we want to take societies down to a childlike level called fluidity, so that they have no reasoning and no critical analysis capacity, so that we can tell them, for their own good, mind you, what is the best way to go about their daily life. And, you know, we'll give them these pleasures every now and again. We'll give them this titillation. We'll give them the Kardashians, God damn it, right? That'll placate these morons. And that's how they think of you, and they write that down and they publish it in books and in very, very prestigious scientific documents and magazines and literature. And again, it's there if you want to find it, basically.
It's true. Folks, your incredulous nature is their greatest power. The idea of you saying this can't possibly be because we can't conceive of people this evil is the true power that keeps them going. And as we can see, this power is just growing stronger and stronger, and we collectively are becoming weaker and weaker, or more de-individuated, de-individualized and brought apart, separated by these different media manipulations. So our core heart stands on the fact that we need to find one another. We need to realize that the mass of humanity is good, loving, caring, generous beings that you can rely on, and that we together can exist and cohabitate this planet without these overlords feeding us this malarkey to guide us down a path of destruction. His name is Neil Sanders. His book, Your Mind Is Not Your Own, in 2 volumes. Do you have any other works out right now, Neil?
Well, I've got a DVD. Sorry, it's Your Thoughts Are Not Your Own, actually.
Your Thoughts Are Not Your Own. Thank you so much for correcting me on that.
And I have a DVD out, but it's only a Region 2 DVD. It's a live presentation that I did. It's a satire. I play the role of an evil salesman teaching you how to be a better salesman. And then, because that is actually on YouTube, so I didn't want to just release something that was just on YouTube, but I promised to release something. So there's another hour, which is, it's like a Skype conference call. It's like a follow-up, basically. The guy's teaching you how to be a better salesman. It's not to be taken entirely seriously. It's a satire. But hopefully it will reveal some of the techniques. And obviously, sorry, the book, Your Thoughts Not Your Own, there's 2 volumes. The first one pertains to sort of MKUltra Mind Control and the Tavistock Institute and various sorts of implementations of Manchurian candidates and psychotronic-type weaponry. And the second one's called Marketing, Movies and Music. And so that pertains to, as I say, the social control, the use of the media, the use of entertainment, and then it finishes on an essay talking about how the LSD explosion was very possibly a social experiment.
Absolutely. Well, I look forward to digging deeper and deeper with you in the members section. I want to thank everyone for tuning in here. It's these Saturday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern on freemantv.com. If you're not making it here and you're just listening to us in the stream, please come over some Saturday nights and join in the chat. We have a great group. We discuss all the shows together. I'll be in there with you as this show is broadcast, and it's really a good time. So come over to freemantv.com, check out thefriendshipagenda.com, become a member, become a friend, and then get over to neilsandersmindcontrol.com and check out his books. Of course, they'll be linked right there with his podcast, so you can check it out. And we'll have all of that information right there for you. So, Neil, thank you for giving us your time and sharing this information with everyone.
Oh, no, thank you very much for inviting me on. It was an absolute pleasure.
And I hope you're ready for a wild ride on the other side. So thank you all. We will see you. And please subscribe to come and check out this live video chat with Freemason. Ask a Freemason anything. Get your questions ready tonight. It will be 3 p.m. tomorrow. That is Sunday. So come on over and check it out. And thank you all again for just being you. And we'll see you next week.